How you been?
Not too bad. Successful in toy hunting as of late, as you saw.
No kidding, dude. What's funny is killing it.
That estate sale I went to, it was down the street, and I noticed it before I left for work. I said, well, let me stop by there for a few minutes to see if they have anything. And I walk in, and there's Megatron in the box. I was like, whoa.
Was it like a company-run estate sale?
Yeah, yeah.
Because they usually eBay the hell out of stuff.
It depends.
Like, they price check things.
Well, yeah, they usually do. But this, like I said, I couldn't believe how cheap it was. It really amazed me, those Alpha Bots. You know, I paid 25 cents for those things. Sold them for $25. That's just insane.
Yeah. Yeah, you inspire me, and then I go walk into, like, a Goodwill or whatever, and I don't see nothing.
So. You got to hit them a lot. You got to hit them often.
Which, you know, being the magic of radio, since we are happen to be in the future, I will have brought you a couple of boxes of stuff to sell to. Because by the time this comes out, we will have had a meta between then and now.
Yes.
But by the time this one drops the Monday that we get back from Texas Frightmare Weekend.
Yes,
so
true.
We have to pre-record this one so we don't have a hangover, and you know, we will not be available to record an episode probably that week.
3 weekends, dude.
I know. So and then I've got a killer weekend myself this weekend.
Okay.
So we're doing Foo Fighters.
Oh, nice.
And
Foo Fighters.
It's it. I can't. You know.
And so they've surpassed so much further than they ever would have with Nirvana, and I hate. Some people might think that's sacrilege to say, but I honestly believe that they have. They've just blown it out of the water with their success and their music style.
Dave Grohl's just a... Well, he'll be the first to say that Cobain was probably a better songwriter in just general, like, sitting down and being like, I can throw down a song. But Grohl's so multi-talented and he's so got so many influences that he can craft wonderful songs.
And they appeal to so many people.
Yeah, so... And watching them, it's just they're as an intense band now as they ever were.
Yeah. Got the hotline ringing.
Well, that. Well, and that's another one. So basically, that was a good segue.
Yeah. Phone's ringing off the hook.
Into our previously announced. Thing that we got going on, which is Scary Dad's Haunted Halloween Show Part 2,
the sequel.
Dun, dun, dun! I don't know if I'm going to play that montage right now, but I might play it a little later in the show. But if you haven't heard the montage, it's pretty badass. I haven't even recorded it yet, but that's how good I know that it is. But anyway, yeah, so look for us. We've got everything going on September 29th. At the Crown Plaza Northwest Brook Hollow on 290 in Pinemont in Houston, Texas.
Yep.
We're really bringing the noise. We're
bigger and better than last year, for sure.
That's it. And we're steadily selling out table space. So if you're interested in tables, get in touch with us on social media, Facebook, Twitter. Probably your best bet is through one of the Facebook groups, so I can see who you are. But by all means, if you're interested in coming out, let us know.
If you're an artist, if you're a writer, if you're selling comic books, selling collectibles, you know, whatever, let us know. We were just trying to get some like-minded people together that enjoy the same things.
Absolutely. So I think that's enough of a plug, other than you need to be there. You need to be there. It's going to be a blast. So anyway, it is May 7th. We just got back from Texas Frightmare Weekend. I'm not even going to ask you how it was, because I know it was badass.
You know.
And this is episode 82. And the title of this episode is Replay.
Yes. The lost episode.
The lost episode. So, a while back, we actually did an episode, and it was all based on a true story. It was all kinds of really cool stuff, movies and books and things that were based on true stories. And it was a really, really cool show. We had a great time doing it. And then we had a bit of a problem. You want to tell them what that problem was?
We had a little bit of background noise and decided to jump onto the recorder.
It's a little bit more than a little bit of background noise. It was pretty bad.
The recording was just trashed. So we're finally getting around to redoing it.
I'm trying to find my sheet.
From way back when?
The original episode was episode 25. Strangely enough, it has been deleted from my database, my root index. I deleted the thing from where it is.
Yep.
It's been pulled off of any of our any of the indexes that we actually have. Because basically, if you're listening to episode 25, there was a slight intro, some intro music, me and Scott saying, "Hey man, how's it going?" And then it went for like a straight hour. And that's whenever we implemented our no cell phone policy.
Yes.
Strangely enough.
You're just ringing my
line just rang, so I had to remember to turn it off. I'm too excited about Frightmare, bro. I'm too excited.
You know, I found a... I was trying to figure out a way, because, you know, I have my Lament configuration.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to figure out a way, because I got to use a paint pen for them to sign it, but I want to make sure the paint pen doesn't smudge. So it's 3 inches by 3 inches. So I found a clear Lexane thing for baseballs. It's 3.1 inch by 3.1 inch. So what I'm going to do is in the corners, I'm going to put a little bit of silicone to where it just grabs it and none of the sides touch the sides to where I can just drop it, pop it right in there after they sign it to keep it protected.
Keep it from bouncing around.
Yeah.
It's a good idea. I'm just going to wear my mask. I'm going to walk around and be like, sign my face, bro. But yeah, episode 25, which came out on April 3rd of 2017, so just a little over a year ago. Not too bad. It didn't take us too long to get back around. But every time we've actually talked about redoing this thing, we've basically just had something come up and we just never got around to it.
Right.
And then whenever it came to like pulling our research, you know, there was...
Let's throw it in.
Yeah. So we're not going to redo the old business for that one. We've got new business. New old business.
New old business.
For replay episode, episode 82, based on a true story. So May 7th, on this date in 1718, a lot of Louisiana stuff in the old business lately.
Yeah.
On this date in 1718, New Orleans was found. And across the world, boobs shivered. On this date in 1824, Beethoven's Ninth Symphony was performed for first time. So that's a pretty recognizable
tune.
Well, you know, 4 seconds, because nobody ever listens to more than that first little dun-dun-dun-dun. Yeah. On this date in 1915, the more things change, the more they stay the same. German submarine sinks the RMS Lusitania, pulling the United States into World War I.
Yep.
And it's been a pretty conspiracy sort of thing ever since. You know, did they allow it? Did the Germans even sink it? Or did they just blame it on them?
Right.
All kinds of stuff. Because, man, anytime there's war, those politicians just can't wait. Cannot wait.
Anytime there's a disaster, there's certain people that anytime there's any kind of disaster, they see dollar signs. Whether it be a hurricane coming through the tropics, earthquake, anything. That's all they see are dollar signs.
Yeah. Well, and that's the, you know, World War I was so horrific anyway, but then you know about the end of it, which was, you know, 11-11. The 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month and blah, blah, blah. Well, yeah, they had a handshake to end the war for like a week. And then they're just like, yeah, let's just end the war on this date to make it symbolic. So for a whole week, people on both sides shot and killed each other and shit blew up and people died after the peace deal had already been signed.
Well, that's the thing. In order to be just that level of rich and powerful, you got to not care.
Yeah.
You got to not give a shit about other people.
That's true.
Because you make money off of suffering half the time.
All right. On this date in 1946, the Tokyo Telecommunication Engineering is founded. And you go...
Later to be known as?
Sony.
Okay.
little punk rock kid's ears everywhere shivered. This is how Walkman was on its way. Do you remember your first Walkman?
Yeah. You know, I still got a couple of old Walkmans laying around here somewhere. But yeah, I do remember my first one.
I remember my friend got one, and he couldn't say it without saying it was a Sony Walkman. And not because he was proud that it was the brand. It was just because it was ubiquitous. Like, Sony was the only one that made one at the time. And so if you had this piece of merchandise, it was a Sony Walkman.
Right.
Like, kind of like a Transformer. If the word trans was the name brand, and you walk around, you're not going to just say, I got a former. You got right. a Transformer. You know, so...
You know, I was still the type of kid that preferred my boombox. Because I like to annoy people. I didn't want to just keep the music to myself. I wanted everyone to hear what I was listening to.
Of course. Of course. I got told to turn it down more times wearing a Walkman than I ever did having listening to the radio. Mom walking by. That is entirely too loud. But you got to turn it up to, you know, drown out all the crap that's happening.
I don't have noise cancellation headphones yet, lady. This is a simple phone crap.
Yeah, you can probably hear it as well as I can. Oh, let's see. Notable births on this date in 1901. Mr. Gary Cooper, cowboy extraordinaire. Mm-hmm. 1965, wrestler Owen Hart was born. And on this date in 1968, this one's done a lot of work for the church as well, Ms. Tracy Lords.
Yeah. I was going through my pulling out issues of Full Metal Female and Scream Queens the other day, and there's a bunch of Tracy Lords covers. But back to Owen Hart. You remember how he died, right?
Mm-mm. I know a lot of them got...
Owen Hart was doing a stunt at a pay-per-view where he was sliding down this cable.
Okay,
and
it broke,
and he fell into the ring and died during the show.
Okay.
Very, very tragic death. And he was a member of the Hart Foundation, which was... His entire family were wrestlers. Bret the Hitman Hart, mm-hmm. Jim the Anvil Neidhart. His dad was a wrestler also. They actually had... I can't remember what they used to call it, but it was like the Hart facility where they trained all these major wrestlers that ended up becoming stars and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It was bred into them, pretty much. But yeah, very, very tragic death.
That sucks. No, I mean, the only, I mean, obviously, very, very tragic. And I don't mean this to sound like it does, because he died doing what he loved.
Yeah.
That's the thing, is most people don't. You know, a lot of people have a heart attack sitting in an office chair and, you know, or dreading the going to work the next day or something like that. You know, whenever Dimebag Darrell got killed.
I remember that day. I remember being at work that day.
One of his anniversaries came up, and I posted that same phrase. I was like, well, the man died doing what he loved. This friend of mine was like, dude, he died getting shot in the head. I was like, true, except his hair was in his face, he was headbanging, he didn't see it coming,
mm-hmm.
He was rocking, and then his lights turned off. Like, not to say that he wouldn't have loved to live forever after right. that, but at least he, you know, he went out doing what he loved to
right.
do. You know, he was completely in his element, and yes, it was totally tragic, but, you know, living, you know, you're doing what you want to do. You're following your dreams, yep. You know. So, all right. Notable deaths on this date in 1896. American serial killer H.H. Holmes. We need to do a show on him. They're okay. going to do a movie about him pretty soon.
Okay.
That dude, brutal.
We could revisit our serial killer episode, definitely.
Well, we talked about him.
Okay.
But we could probably do a whole show on him. He's the one that built the murder hotel.
The Acid Bath. The Acid Bath.
The
Acid Bath,
yep. Yeah. In Chicago, and he's like, when World's Fair came in, he's like, oh, this is awesome. There'll be a whole lot of foreigners, a lot of outer towners.
Nobody's going to miss.
That nobody will miss for a long time, and they'll never know they were here. And on this date in 1998, country singer Eddie Rabbit. The only reason he's on here is because we were talking to him about...
Yeah, we talked about him another day.
I know. It's weird how these things work, but it just, I mean... It all kind of ties in. And that is it for Old Business.
Do you remember a country music singer named Eddie Raven?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, did you know, fun fact, I learned this today, Eddie Raven was originally approached to make Achy Breaky Heart, and he turned it down.
We ought to send some hate mail to Raven.
Because you could potentially not have a Miley Cyrus
had
Billy Ray Cyrus not made Achy Breaky Heart.
That's what I'm talking about.
Louisiana born and bred, Eddie Raven turned down the chance to record
that song. Have you heard that thing about the Buffalo Bills losing that either the playoff game or the Super Bowl game? It was like back in the 70s or something. And
they used to choke a lot.
Well, they choked. But it gave them a draft pick, and they brought on O.J. Simpson.
Okay.
And then when O.J. Simpson moved to New York, that's where he met Nicole Brown and Kardashian.
Mm-hmm.
So if the Bills hadn't have choked, then we wouldn't have had the O.J. Simpson trial, because he never would have met her.
Right.
And Kardashian never would have been famous. So we have the Buffalo Bills playing for the Kardashians being famous. That's like the butterfly effect, but it's actually like it's all linked up. It's like if you wouldn't have missed that pass, you would.
That'd be a fun episode to do one day. Just find different stories like that. We never would have gone a certain path.
Yeah. A whole different thing.
All right, let's take a break. We'll be back.
A creature alive today has survived millions of years of evolution. It lives to kill. A mindless eating machine that will attack and devour anything. One terrified you like nothing you have ever experienced when it captured your imagination and tapped your fear like no movie before it. Then, just when you thought it was safe to go back in the water, two continued the legend and spread the fear. Next summer, nature's most terrifying creature takes on an all-new dimension in an all-new adventure. And for the first time, the terror of Jaws will not stop at the edge of the screen. Jaws 3D. The third dimension is terror.
Hello, everyone. It's Johnny of Cybernicide.
And we're going to be on the Scary Dad podcast. It's going to be myself. It's going to be Joey Trauma. It's going to be Amy, also known as Molly Needles. And we're going to be hanging out with Scott and Billy from Scary Dad. So make sure you stay tuned. Check your feeds. We'll have great horror merging very soon.
All right. Let's get to new business.
Yes. Since we just left off with doing some deaths, we've had a few deaths this past weekend. By the time we go ahead and get to this episode, everybody's probably heard about these already, but we'll just go ahead and talk about them. One of the bigger ones is Lee Ermey.
Yeah.
Passed away, which is pretty significant. The quintessential drill sergeant for my generation, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Came out with Full Metal Jacket and just became an iconic figure from that movie.
He was in Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
The remake and the sequel to the remake.
Yeah.
And he was incredible in that. He was scary as hell in that movie, dude. He's just psychopath.
Dude, his performance in Full Metal Jacket is perhaps one of the scariest performances of anybody in any movie.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you just think about how just intense he was. And you know, Full Metal Jacket, obviously, was an anti-war movie. But you look, I mean, these guys are draftees, first of all. They're not enlisted men. They don't want to be there.
Right.
So, which makes it all the worse, because they're just getting completely abused, tortured by this guy.
Right.
And this guy, for, you know, for what it's worth, I mean, he's a military guy. He doesn't want these freaking draftees in here. He wants Marines. He wants volunteers.
And there's a way
he's got to whip these guys.
He's got to condition them to get them in the mindset. Yeah,
to not die. And he knows a lot of them are going to.
Right.
So he can't, you know, and like it's not as if he would get personal and all warm and lovey dovey if they were enlisted, but just the intensity.
But when you look at
and the realism, I mean, that's tough.
But that's what I was going to say. With if you look at, you know, this is a comedic movie, but Sergeant Hulk. If you look at Lou Gossett Jr. from Officer and Gentleman, Ermey was the drill sergeant.
Yes, well, he was that way in real life too.
Yeah, yeah,
he was that guy. Man, I've seen all of these memes floating around of Ermey and different characters. So as Gunny and the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and you know, different scenes. And the one that got me, the one that kind of choked me up, was the little army man in Toy Story.
Yeah, I did
and
see that.
And he's standing on the ground saluting Woody, and Woody's just kind of sitting on the bench looking sad. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh man, you know.
But let's go ahead and do a little toast to Ermey real quick.
Yes.
We'll go to the next one.
Formative. Man.
Next thing we know, we hear that Harry Anderson from Night Court and It, the original It, passed away. It totally caught me off guard because you haven't heard anything about Harry Anderson forever. Mm-hmm. But when I was a kid, Night Court was a staple to my sitcom world.
Mm-hmm.
We watched it every time it came on. You know, Night Court was the shit. Loved Bull, loved Judge Harry, the Mel Torme references, you know, everything. He it blew me away when I saw he passed away.
Yeah, well, they haven't released a cause of death on him, but, you know, he's 65 years old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people live in the spotlight, but, you know, they have their health problems, and, you know, whether it was something slow or whether it was just, you know, a heart attack or a stroke or something, we don't know.
Right.
But at this point, we don't know.
There's a documentary coming up called Pennywise, The Story of It.
But you don't think about, like, you don't think about funny people dying unless they go out, like, in a Coke binge or something.
Yeah, speedballing.
You know, but just, like, lovable, funny people don't just, like,
die.
Kill over, right. You know. I mean, they do, but, you know, it kind of hits you harder.
But in the upcoming documentary, they interviewed over 50 original cast and crew of the original 1990s movie. So I'm not sure if he's going to be involved in any of those interviews or not. They haven't announced it, but it'd be nice to see at least, you know, one parting shot from him. So
yeah,
another drink to old Harry Anderson. And finally, I don't know how much you were into this guy, but I used to do a lot of late night driving.
Art Bell.
So I used
Bell.
To listen to him all the time. But Art Bell.
Art Bell, I want to have to say, really kind of woke up a part of my mind that was, I wouldn't say it was closed, but the true horror that kind of lays behind normal things. You know what
right.
I mean? And yeah, he did a lot of stuff with ghosts and aliens, and it was a paranormal show.
And conspiracy theories.
And he had a lot of conspiracy theories, yeah. And he had a lot of guests talking about, you know, underground government stuff and Area 51. And, you know, it was Art Bell, either him or one of his guests, or George Norrie or one of those guys, but it was on Art Bell's show that got me in that whole, like, mindset of, like, just follow the money. If you want, if you're curious if a conspiracy is plausible, it doesn't matter if it really happened, but is it plausible? Well, is there a whole lot of money to be gained or lost?
Right, what's the end?
Is there a financial gain in the end? You say, well, it wouldn't make us a whole lot of money if this. Well, then it probably isn't true. You know, you can blame a lot of stuff on stupidity over malevolence. But is there malevolence? Is there money to be made? Then it's a plausible thought.
Right.
You know? But yeah, Art Bell, I used to listen to him driving around all the time, especially when I was driving at night.
Yeah, I remember it was Phil Hendry, and then Art Bell would come on afterwards and everything, because I'd leave to go offshore, and I'd leave in the middle of the night to drive all the way to the docks and everything, and that's what I would listen to, so.
East of the Rockies, you're on.
Yeah, so here's a little drink to Art Bell.
Art Bell. I'm going to miss that guy.
Oh, yeah.
He hadn't been on the radio in a long time, but man.
Okay. Going on to some happier stuff.
Well, Barbara Bush died this morning.
Yes, she passed away today also.
And don't know much about, you know, she was the husband of the president. But
the wife of the president. But
well, yeah, the wife of the president. Hey, man, we live in new times. You can't use those kind of pronouns.
Except being gender specific.
And this morning, talk about horror. You heard about the Southwest Airlines jet?
Oh, that was insane, dude. Actually, I should have had that on here, but we can talk about that in a little bit. It was like the scene from Twilight Zone.
Yeah. Flying through the air, the engine explodes.
Flies off.
A piece of shrapnel from the engine flies into the cabin and kills a guy.
And then sucks somebody out.
Well, no, only one of them died, so I guess...
But the person that got sucked partway out didn't die. Okay. They were just part... Basically, there was a scene, I can't remember what movie it was, but there was a hole in the airplane and somebody flew up and their butt, like, stopped the hole. That's essentially what happened, is this person went through one of the holes and... They said there was blood everywhere.
Yeah.
Well, passengers were texting their families, saying goodbye, that they loved them and stuff. It was... Imagine how scary that situation was.
Let's drink one to the guy on that plane, because I actually fly a lot.
Right.
And... Moving on to happier news.
It's like Final Destination stuff.
Yeah, that was terrifying. Just to read the article, can you imagine being on that plane? Yeah. Ooh.
Okay. Chris Columbus. Not the Spanish explorer, but the original writer of Gremlins.
Mm-hmm.
Has confirmed that a Gremlins reboot is happening right now. Now, the talk is out there, nothing's been confirmed one way or another, but is he going to go with the original screenplay he wrote where Gremlins was an R-rated horror movie? Because if he does, I think that would be awesome, because you'd have all these 40s soccer moms that would want to bring their kids to relive Gremlins. And they'll walk into the movie, and next thing you know, his mom is getting her head cut off by Stripe.
Dude.
Because they don't read the same trade magazines we do, so they would have no idea that it's now an R-rated horror movie.
I'm still shocked that that movie was ever
marketed
as a kids movie. I mean, that movie was scary as hell. It's still scary as hell. I mean...
But just imagine if it would have went with the original screenplay.
I know. I'm saying, like, dude, you're right. I'm not much for the reboots, but they'd also have to bring back the same Gremlins.
Yeah.
They couldn't CGI it. It would have to be the same puppets. Yeah.
But no, originally, Gizmo was supposed to be Stripe. Gizmo was actually... There was no good Gremlin in the end. No Mugwai saving everybody. It just all straight up...
Just evil.
Yeah. So we'll have to keep an eye on that to see how that turns out. Okay, Steven Spielberg is in the news right now. Do you know why? Have you heard about this? He's the first director ever to cross the $10 billion mark. As a director.
If anybody was going to, it would have to be him.
Yeah, well, yeah, but what's amazing to me is about this.
Or is George Lucas.
This is only in regards to movies that he directed. So the movies that he produced, like Transformers, Jurassic World, none of those are in this stat. He's directed $10 billion worth of movies.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty damn impressive, dude. And then we're going to some of the numbers. E.T. originally made $717 million. You adjust it for inflation, and E.T. grossed $1.3 billion by itself. That is nuts, dude.
These are theaters. These are not merchandising takes and stuff.
Right, yeah, this is just ticket sales. And what's amazing is he just broke $10 billion. The next one down, number two, is Peter Jackson with $6.5 billion. No one would probably ever achieve what he has achieved as a director of films.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a pretty amazing stat. You say that dude's got some money.
You think?
Okay, we'll try to round it out with a couple of quick ones here.
Because you think about the stuff that, like, Poltergeist. Tobe Hooper had a director credit on there, but Steven Spielberg ran that show.
Yeah, that was his movie, right.
Same thing with Raiders of the Lost Ark. George Lucas directed it, technically.
Right.
Steven Spielberg was...
very much hands-on.
Yeah. He was probably, like, had one of those, like, baby-born things and was, like, strapped to George Lucas's chest, being, like, call cut.
Okay, a Harvard cloning scientist has recently did a speech at a... And what's funny is he looks like the guy from the movie. His name is Dr. George Church. And he has come up and let it be known that he is going to be using DNA from a 42,000-year-old carcass of a woolly mammoth to clone a woolly mammoth using Asian elephants. So there's a process they use where they actually just swap out the DNA.
Same as in Jurassic Park.
Yeah, yeah. And they're going to go ahead and it's going to be an artificial womb where they make the embryos and grow them in a lab.
Hmm.
We're moving closer. Next thing you know, we'll have a zombie T-Rex running around.
Strangely enough, dude, it's like... Well, let's roll it back. So, like, if you're writing a story, there's a lot of stuff that, as you're writing a story, you have to bridge gaps.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, you're writing Jurassic Park. You have a good idea. Like, there's a park full of dinosaurs. How did they bring the dinosaurs back? Like, the logic makes sense in that world, and you don't really have to you don't have to be a geneticist in order to understand, because they did it with that little cartoon. It's like, oh, just like you say, they just swapped some DNA,
right.
So they got a partial chain, and they just synthesize it with some frog protein.
Yeah.
and it works, and you can go, okay, well, and then you read all of the people who are actual real scientists that are like, no, that's impossible for reason A, B, and C. But the funny thing about that is that there's so many things that were 100% impossible until people had the idea from a book and then they tried it.
Right.
Like submarines and helicopters and rocket ships and, you know, like so many other things that we have that, you know, like computers. Look, you know, we've already bypassed Star Trek communicators, but you remember, like, the communicators from the 60s, you know, they were flip phones.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I don't think the designers of the flip phones were necessarily being like, hey, look, it's Star Trek.
They weren't Trekkies, yeah.
they were like, hey, look, this is the most functional way that we can put this thing together, you know, blah, blah, blah. But, yeah, so you give a four-year-old an idea. And then you fast forward 50 years, you've got cloned woolly mammoths. You know? Like, wow. Well, Jurassic Park was, that was 20 years, but still.
Yeah, still. Okay. In Baden-Württemberg, Germany, guy calls police, says, hey, I was walking down the street. There looks like there's a headless body down by this stream. Do you guys need to come check this out? So the police go, and sure enough, there's a body down there, covered in blood, no head. So it was like down these rocks going towards the stream. So they cordon off the area and they clear people out. You know, they're staging and shit. And they got to call the fire department because they can't get down there. They need help to be able to get to the body. So the fire department comes out and this huge scene. It was a doll. Somebody had dropped a headless doll down by the stream.
Oh no!
And yeah, so it started this huge, messy operation with the police and the fire department coming out.
Have you seen, it's a video, I don't know where it is, it looks like it's in Europe somewhere, and the ice is thin, but somebody has gone out and like it's like lake ice with snow on it, and somebody's drawn a giant dick in the snow on the ice, but the ice is cracked. So the police are over there trying to reach out there with brooms to try to erase the dick from the ice. And they can't reach it because it's too far out. It's like, so somebody either, like, the ice was thicker when they did it, or they broke the ice and went out there and did it, and then it froze up again and snowed some more. But it's the funniest thing, because you're like, okay, you get a big rock.
You break it.
You throw it. You break it. And get, or you get a hose and spray it down and, like, you know, spray it off. But yeah, they're up there with the brooms trying to...
I don't want to offend anybody with the penis. That's it for new business. So,
all right, let's take a break and then we'll go back in time a little bit.
Yeah.
Shout Factory TV, changing the channel.
I shot him 6 times. I shot him in the heart. He's not human.
Universal Pictures presents Halloween 2, More of the Night He Came Home.
Who is it?
There was nothing within him, neither conscience nor reason, that wasn't even remotely human.
This is some kind of a joke. I've been trick-or-treated to death tonight.
You don't know what death is.
Janet, go tell Mr. Garrett we're having trouble with the phones.
There is no place to hide. He will always find you.
What's this?
It's a Celtic word. It means the Lord of the Dead.
Yes. Hope you enjoyed that message from our sponsor.
Yes. Like I said, whenever we do have anything from one of our sponsors, even if it's an old clip from a movie from back in the 70s or 80s, that's a full-on endorsement. We're actually saying, go watch that movie.
Yeah.
Not necessarily at the drive-thru in Sacramento, because that's a long drive. But you should hit up your Google machine and... see if you can pick up an old, you know, Friday the 13th Part 5.
Right. It's always good to watch Friday the 13th Part 5. Personally, I'd jump on number 6, Part 6 or Part 3, but...
I'm usually...
Whatever floats your boat.
I'm usually, either a Part 4 or Part 3.
I sort of really like Part 6 for some reason. I have no idea why, but it's...
You know...
I've been watching that one the most lately.
I watched Part 6 not too long ago, and it is fun. It's definitely a fun... I don't know, it's just a special place in my heart for 4. I think it's probably because when I was a little kid, Corey Feldman was the same age, so that fear, and he had like all the monsters in his room, and I always thought that was really cool. And then to have all those monsters in the room and then have a real ass monster coming after you, that's right. Like not every kid's dream to have your mom like offed by a zombie machete killer, but still.
Well, I think I really like having the guy from Return of the Living Dead playing Tommy in Part 6.
Yeah.
It's just cool.
Come here, Jason. Give me a bite of them spicy brains.
I had forgot. I realized that the girl that played his girlfriend in Return of the Living Dead 1 and 2, she's the chick in Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
No kidding.
Yeah, it's the same girl that played his girlfriend in those movies. She's in that one. So I thought that was kind of cool to see.
Nice.
I picked up a copy of that for on the cheap this past weekend. And, of course, I picked up a copy of Cannonball Run, which we're watching right now, but not because it's a horror movie, because it has a very sexy Adrienne Barbeau in it. I can't wait to meet her.
Yeah. Hey, do you want that one book that I have so you can get it signed?
Yeah. Well, I got a poster. I got a poster from the movie.
Okay.
I'm going to have her signed. But, yeah, that'd be cool.
It's that book that she wrote.
Right. Yeah, that'd be awesome.
So
she'd probably appreciate that. She might give me a little smile. Show up with that one.
Yeah, well, I know we're gonna be doing a lot of walking around and waiting in lines and meeting.
But
our
we did
own folks.
It already.
Well, okay, yeah. So, will you have wanted to borrow that book?
Yes, I think I will have, and I'll have it signed.
I will have had it signed. There we go. All right, we started off this segment with a little technical difficulty, so I'm kind of keeping a watch on the clock, but it looks like everything is good to go. So, without further ado, so let's go ahead and get into the episode. Why are we having technical this is just this, a curse.
Yeah, because this subject, this for some reason, is rough to get through.
Because the phone rang. It was the phone that killed this episode the first time. And then the recorder's trying to flake out on us. And no, it's not full. I dump everything every time I offload everything. So I think it was just a glitch or a blurb. And it has happened before. We recorded entire episodes with the recorder off. And it's funny because everybody's been in this mode. They've all been in like chatty talking mode, and as soon as like, oh, the recorder's gone, then they're
just,
like, they're
it just deflates the balloon.
Their attitude just changes, and nobody wants to say anything anymore.
Because like Meg was like, I'm done with this. Yeah. we did an episode. You got the one out of me. Yeah. You're not getting another one tonight.
It's like the frog on Bugs Bunny. And like, just put him back in his box and build the building around him. All right, so let's talk about some based on a true story.
Yeah, now these aren't in any particular order. It's just a list that I found that I thought we'd go through, but we'll start off with Open Water. I'm sure you've seen that movie.
Yes, I have.
Open Water involves a couple. They go scuba diving. Their boat accidentally leaves them behind in shark-infested water. It's based on something that actually happened. American tourist Tom and Eileen Lonergan. They were left behind by a diving company off the Great Barrier Reef. By the time the mistake was realized, 2 days later, it was too late, and they were never seen again. In the real-life instance, it does not look like it was a shark attack, though, because they found their dive jackets with no damage to them at all. They think that they just went delirious from dehydration, took off their jackets, and drowned. That's rough.
Fair enough, yeah.
It was very rough.
That was a hard movie to watch.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a good movie, and I like anything shark-related, but that was a whole lot less about the sharks than it was about just being. I mean, if you're dropped in the woods and there's bears chasing you, people are made for running, right? You're not designed for swimming in open water for,
right?
You know, there's nothing to drink, there's nothing to eat, and you're surrounded by killer sharks. And if not killer sharks, then killer something,
right?
I mean,
you got tides and everything, you got currents you got to deal with. It's. I remember a while back. I want to say, was it Robert Kovacs? It was a former NFL linebacker. Went fishing by himself at night. His boat sunk. He swam 16 miles. It took it's not quite 24 hours for him to get to shore. And he actually swam 16 miles, dude, off the coast of Florida. There's no way. I'd make it.
I'd
make
die.
It a half mile. That would be it.
But man, Florida is covered in sharks too.
Yeah,
I mean, I read it was a book by Hemingway, so it's fiction, but it was close enough. It was about this gun runner who would run back and forth between Florida and Cuba, and one of the things he would do is like he'd get some illegals. He was a coyote. He'd get some folks from Cuba who wanted to immigrate over into Florida, and he'd bring them out and set them on the reef at low tide. He'd get his machine gun and tell them to get off the boat.
Oh shit.
He'd take their money and just, like, he was a bad guy in the book. He was not the good guy. But yeah, you just like set them on a reef, but when that tide comes in, gone. Rough.
Could you imagine this guy that swam in? Former NFL linebacker. You're on the beach chilling out. You've been drinking all day, so you got a good buzz going. All of a sudden, this giant linebacker covered in seaweed and dehydrated comes up. It would scare the shit out of you,
man. Oh, yeah, it would.
All right, moving on. Nightmare on Elm Street. Did you know that was based on a true story?
I didn't know that it was based on something Wes Craven had read.
Yes. Wes Craven says that he got the idea from an article he read in the LA Times about a family of Cambodian refugees with a young son who was reporting he was having nightmares. He told his parents he was afraid that if he slept, the thing chasing him would get him, so he tried to stay awake for days at a time. He finally went to sleep. Parents thought that it was over with, and they heard screams in the middle of the night. By the time they got to him, he was dead. He died in the middle of a nightmare. That's where the idea for the movie came to Wes Craven, and he went with it from that, so that's pretty crazy.
Yeah. There's a lot of the power of suggestion in, you know, people who get hypnotized or whatever. and this doesn't have to do with that, but I mean, like, basically, if you think you're going to die, sometimes you will, and mm-hmm. your body will just
give the ghost.
I read a long time ago about this practice. It was I don't think it was voodoo because it was a shaman, but it was some kind of it was an African practice or whatever, and the shaman used to have this thing, and it was called boning, of all things. But yeah, basically, the shaman decided that he didn't like you. He had some kind of like little bone, mm-hmm. about 6-inch bone that he used like a magic wand, and he'd walk out to you and he'd say some magic words and he'd point the bone at you, and it had like 100% fatality rate. You would just start wasting away and dying if you got boned by the shaman. And it's like, and
you gotta think a lot of it was mental.
It probably was. Well, I mean, obviously it was. I mean, unless he like snuck into your tent in the night and like started hitting you with some kind of strange poison or something. But still, so let's say just for example, let's say, you know, he pointed the bone at you and then somebody slipped something in your drink. You're like, I ain't done nothing wrong, but man, I'm not feeling good. That guy in his damn bone. Then you start feeling worse.
Okay, another one of our favorite movies that is based on a true story. And there's a lot of them like this. You can take this movie, you can take Amityville House of Horror. There's a lot of movies that were based on instances like this. But The Poltergeist, of course, is based on a home in Seaford, New York, in 1958. They had a bunch of unexplained events all of a sudden start happening. Loud popping noises, objects moving around. Of course, Poltergeist. Most of the movies you see that are based on true events, they kind of embellish what actually happened, of course, to make it a movie. But yeah, but there's, you know how many hauntings there've been in the country over the years and everything, that they're bound to go ahead and inspire something. Okay, let's go down. Scream. The movie Scream. Classic 90s slasher flick. Tells the story of a group of teens and a mystery man named Ghostface who wants to murder them. Real story isn't as funny. The movie was inspired by the Gainesville Ripper. Real name was Danny Rolling, who killed 5 Florida students by knife over a span of 3 days in August of 1990.
Wow.
Okay, so you didn't know that one was also...
I did not know that one was real.
Based on a true story. Let's see where else we're going to go. Don't want to do that one. Hope you don't mind, folks. I'm picking out certain movies to go ahead and talk about. Here's one, Annabelle.
Annabelle, I'm quite familiar with.
Yes. Annabelle kind of took inspiration from a couple of different instances, but Annabelle is about a creepy porcelain doll from The Conjuring, gets her terror in this... it was inspired by a couple named the Warrens.
So the Warrens were basically paranormal investigators.
Yes.
And they're quite controversial.
I'd say a lot of people think they're full of shit.
Well, that's what controversial means.
Yep.
There's a lot of people that believe them every word, and there's a lot of stuff that's controversial. Here at the Scary Dad Podcast, we don't debunk. We just say what.
And take it for what it is.
So essentially what would happen is the Warrens, Ed and Lorraine... They were paranormal investigators, and they would, when people thought they had ghosts or spirits or whatever, they would be called in to investigate. And like any paranormal investigators, they'd try to make sure it wasn't pipes or the house settling or, you know, wind through the chimney or something making the noises. And whenever they could not find a rational explanation for things, they would investigate further, oftentimes trace it back to an item or a person, and then either call in an exorcist or remove the item. And a lot of times, once they remove that item, then the haunting would stop.
Mm-hmm.
Annabelle was one of their more dangerous ones, because Annabelle actually, the doll itself, like, terrorized the family.
Yep.
And it changed hands a couple of times before the Warrens actually got a hold of it. It's not really the thing from The Conjuring. The Conjuring is obviously heavily embellished.
Yeah.
But there is a story, and the Annabelle doll is actually a Raggedy Ann doll, and they kept it in a glass case.
Very ugly one.
Yeah. They kept it in a glass case in their home. In their home, they had like a trophy room of all these haunted items.
Right.
Which, is bizarre because, you know, again, whether or not you believe in these things, you know, what else is a museum? Is a whole bunch of artifacts from people's lives, right? But if you think these things are possessed or haunted,
you want to build a gang of them,
and then just like get as many of them as you can and shove them in your game room
to where they can plot and conspire against you.
I don't know how much of this stuff I believe, but I certainly wouldn't want that room in my house. I mean, yeah, I could put it in Scott's house and come over and look at it. But your wife's like, hey, does something go bump in the night? You're like, yeah, it does that.
Just ignore it. Okay, another pretty big movie that was based on true events is The Exorcist from 1973. You know, young girl gets possessed. Two priests come in, try to save her. A huge box office hit. It did a lot for helping the horror genre. The movie was based on a 1949 Washington Post article that headlined, Priest Frees Mount Rainier Boy Reported Held in Devil's Grip. The director, William Friedkin, spoke about the article. One day they'll discover the cause of what happened to that young man, but back then it was only curable by an exorcism. His family weren't even Catholics, they were Lutheran. It started with doctors and psychiatrists and then psychologists, and then they went to the minister who couldn't help them, and they wound up with the Catholic Church. The Washington Post article says that the boy was possessed and exorcised. It's pretty out on a limb for a national newspaper to put on its front page. I mean, it was a legitimate news source that was talking about this. You're not going to see that on the front page of an intelligent newspaper unless there's something there. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of why he went ahead and ran with it.
Well, apparently the Catholic Church, and I'm not Catholic, and I don't keep up with the Catholic Church, but I see headlines, and in the last couple of years,
lots of exorcisms.
There's a lot of exorcisms to the point where, like, they're actually giving like exorcism classes.
Yeah, and it's not just Catholics. The Muslim religion is having to deal with a lot of it too.
Just people going, just snapping out and going nuts. Mm-hmm. It's weird. I wonder how much of it is actually reactions to psychotropic drugs. You know, it's like you have all these kids on Ritalin.
Yeah.
You know. And
look at the way bath salts make people behave. Where somebody's possessed by the devil with that kind of stuff.
Breaking into Sirius for just a moment. Okay, so if you're trying to find the cure, you know, there's the symptom and then there's the source, right? Mm-hmm. You're going for what the problem is. Medication masks symptoms. It doesn't necessarily target the source. So in other words, if you happen to have headaches and you go take an aspirin, the aspirin will make the headache go away. But the reason you're having headaches is not because you're deficient in aspirin.
Right.
Right? It's not because you happen to be low on aspirin that you're having headaches. Your headaches are being caused by some other malady, whether it's stress or tension or a tumor or whatever it may be. There's a reason you're having headaches, and it has nothing to do with aspirin. Mm-hmm. So whenever you have all these kids that are getting prescribed all of these psychotropic drugs for like things like ADHD and, you know, personality disorders and all this stuff, there's a reason why they're having these maladies. And I'm not going to sit here and say that these maladies aren't real and that they're not manifest, but if you're just giving them medicine to like dampen down their personality a bit, and there's something truly wrong with them, I'm not saying it's demons, but whatever it is, it's like the human body's like whenever you start getting into symptom relief, it's like a game of whack-a-mole. Mm-hmm. Or it's like a leaky boat. Once you plug one leak, it's going to spring another one somewhere else. Like that problem is going to find a way to break itself out. And you know, especially whenever you're talking about mental problems, I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of people were possessed. I mean, not necessarily by an actual physical demon, but shit.
did you see what they're starting to use for symptoms of depression and suicidal thoughts? Ketamine. They're putting people in K-holes, basically. That's one of the things they're looking at right now. And I saw that LSD is making a comeback, apparently, too, in the young urban professional world for concentration.
It's a strange thing.
All right.
Take your protein pills and put your helmet on. We're in the brave new world, bro. Anyway.
Okay. Hills Have Eyes. Original in 1977, remake in 2006. Cult classic by Wes Craven. It is a gruesome, brutal movie. I've seen both of them several times, and I enjoy them personally. It's a movie that gets to you for sure. Kind of like a House of a Thousand Corpses type thing. Centers around a traveling family whose car breaks down, leaving them stranded in the clutches of cannibals that live in the mountains in the desert. This is based on one of my favorite old tales of the Sawney Bean clan. I know you're familiar with Sawney Bean.
I just want to know, like, what the recipes were.
They just ate them raw, dude. Okay, for those not familiar with Sawney Bean, Alexander Sawney Bean was said to be the head of a 48-member clan in Scotland between the 13th and 16th centuries, reportedly executed for mass murder and cannibalism of over 1,000 people. The Sawney Bean story is one of the craziest things you've ever read. It is believed that it's an old myth, that it actually never occurred, but I like thinking that it did. According to some stories, Bean was born in East Lothian during the 1500s. His dad was a ditch digger and hedge trimmer. Judge Smales would be proud. And Bean tried to take up the family trade, but quickly realized he had a little taste for actual honest labor. So he went ahead, got him an old lady, left home, decided to go ahead and live out in the woods. They found a cave that went undiscovered for 25 years. It was 200 yards deep, and during high tide, the entrance was blocked by water, which helped them hide out often. People would come by searching when during high tide. They wouldn't see the cave. They'd wait till it would go down. And, could you imagine living in a flooded cave half the time? It would just be the humidity, the dampness, the mold.
It would make you want to eat people.
The dead flesh going around. A couple eventually produced 8 sons, 6 daughters, 18 grandkids, 18 grandsons, and 14 granddaughters. Various grandchildren were products of incest. Lacking the inclination for regular labor, the clan thrived by laying careful ambushes at night to rob and murder individuals in small groups. Bodies were brought back to the cave where they were dismembered and eaten. Leftovers were pickled. Discarded body parts would sometimes wash up on nearby beaches. Body parts and disappearance did not go unnoticed by the local villagers, but the Beans stayed in the caves by the day and took their victims at night, so they weren't found. The clan was so secretive that the villagers were unaware of the murderers living right there in their midst.
I can get you a toe. I know people.
On one fateful night, the Beans ambushed a married couple riding from a fair on one horse, but the man was skilled in combat, deftly holding off the clan with a sword and pistol. The clan mauled the wife, fell to the ground. Before they could take the resilient husband, a large group of fairgoers appeared on the trail, and the Beans fled. And that's when they realized, hey, there's some crazy, sadistic people living out here. This is why everybody's disappearing. So they were caught. They were executed.
I would have thought it was like poetic justice. Like they were caught and then they were promptly eaten.
Eaten by hogs or something.
Yeah, you fed them to hogs or fed them to sharks. I mean, if you got a high tide, you can...
But if you got some time to read up about the Sawney Bean clan, I highly recommend you do. It's a just crazy, crazy story. Whether it's true or not, I do not know. I'm not going to say whether or not. I just think it's a cool story. And it's pretty much a lot of cannibal movies have been... have helped give way to a lot of... have been based upon the Sawney Bean family. Okay, here's another one. The Shining. Stanley Kubrick's horror masterpiece about a man who is driven to insanity by supernatural forces while staying at a remote hotel in the Rockies. Movie derives from Stephen King's book of the same name. The book was inspired by the Stanley Hotel in Colorado, which I know you're familiar with. Mm-hmm. Plenty of guests have reported seeing ghosts there. The Stanley wasn't actually used in the movie, however, because Kubrick didn't think it looked scary enough, so you wanted to find kind of a creepier location. But the way the story goes, Stephen King was staying at the Stanley with a very skeleton crew that was there, and things were happening. Shook them up and inspired the movie. You can go ahead and...
Well, they showed up. He's got a story about it. So basically, Stephen King was from and lives in Bangor, Maine. And he was a school teacher. And he got famous, so he wrote He wrote Carrie, and it got published, and he got famous, and he wrote Salem's Lot.
Yeah, Salem's Lot was next.
And he was in process of writing his next book, and they finally convinced him. His wife convinced him, like, let's go on a vacation, like someplace not here. So they went to Colorado. And they weren't going to stay at the Stanley. Like, they weren't supposed to be staying there for long. But it was a place that was kind of legendary because it was kind of remote and it got closed off in the winter and stuff. And they wanted to go because it was purportedly haunted and it was kind of neat. Well, when they got there, it was closing day. Like, they were closing the thing down to close it up for the winter. And so they showed up. There's like, all the chairs were up on the tables. There was a skeleton crew. The whole hotel was empty. I think they were the only guests, or one of only a handful. Mm-hmm. And so they had like this weird lounge music being pumped in through the PA.
With no other noise, just that background noise.
Yeah, and so like there's a bandstand like with instruments, but it was like dark, and you know. And he said that basically, so he went upstairs, and they went to bed and went to sleep, and he woke, and during the sleep he had a dream, and in his dream his son was running down the hall and he was being chased by the fire hose. And he woke up and he said that he goes and he sat down and he lit a cigarette and stared out the window at the snow coming down out over the mountains. And he said by the time he had the cigarette finished, he had the bones of the book mapped out in his head. And that's where The Shining came from.
Right.
And, but yeah, he was there. He was there. He had a dream, and it scared the hell out of him, so he wrote about it. And
the Stanley Hotel itself, that a lot of ghost hunters have been there. I think there are certain rooms in particular they say are more haunted than others. But if you look up on YouTube, you can find videos that some of these ghost hunters have done where they set up in the rooms and doors open. There's one video where a glass, while the guy's sleeping, the glass just shatters.
If you look up there, the podcast Lore, mm-hmm. Lore has it's about a 30-minute episode about the Stanley Hotel itself. It's not about Stephen King. Stephen King's story kind of comes right at the end, but it talks about the Stanley brothers, who they were. They were like these genius twins that were inventors and like multimillionaires and just very eccentric and very cool. And one of them built the hotel up there, and it's a really, really cool episode. But yeah, that's one of the things that's on my bucket list, is going up to
the Stanley Hotel,
Estes Park, Colorado, awesome. and staying at the Stanley.
Okay, now we have two movies that one of them was somewhat inspired by a particular person, the other one was fully inspired by a particular person, but we'll start off with the one that was partially, and we'll go into the other one. But Silence of the Lambs from 1991. Story of an FBI cadet who enlists the help of a cannibal serial killer to pin down another serial killer named Buffalo Bill, who skins the bodies of his victims to make a nice little woman suit that he wants to wear.
In Silence of the Lambs, it was a big woman suit.
Yeah, it was a big woman suit. He had loose skin. He had to make him lose weight to where the skin was loose enough.
Yeah.
FBI Special Agent John Douglas, who consulted on the film, has explained that Bill was inspired in part by Ted Bundy and also by Ed Gein, who is believed to be an inspiration to several movies. And also it kind of delves into a 1980s killer named Gary Heidnik, who was used as a reference for how Buffalo Bill kept his victims in a pit, because this guy apparently did the same thing. But Ed Gein also inspired, and we'll close with this one, one of the most influential horror movies of our time, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, originally made in 1974 and also remade in 2003. Ed Gein was a psychopath. He was a very, very strange man.
Ed Gein was. What's funny about it, and what's so interesting, I had a girlfriend a long time ago that was real interested in like serial killers. She had a book about them, and she had a couple of books about them. And she was not interested in being a serial killer. She was just interested in the pathology. But Ed Gein was always one of those where if you looked at their like all these serial killers and body count, he was like the most influential serial killer.
He only killed.
But he wasn't even a serial killer.
Right. He killed two people.
He was a grave robber.
Yeah.
But yet he's inspired all of these copycat killers. Whereas, like me, I always thought Zodiac was cool.
Yeah.
Not cool in, like, boy, but if I was going to be a serial killer, like, he had a costume, he wrote with the coded notes,
yeah,
and that kind of stuff, and it's like, I mean, that's a character right there.
They're still trying to break his code, by the way. That was in the news the other day.
Yeah.
They got some computer algorithms that are trying to work with it again.
And, you know, I liked Zodiac to a point. I remember my dad being like, why are you so interested in this guy? He's a cold-blooded killer. I'm like, because there's lots of cold-blooded killers out there, but he's interesting. Like,
he's never been caught.
But
Ed Gein, also known as the Butcher of Plainfield, was an American murderer and body snatcher. Crimes were committed around Plainfield, Wisconsin, his home. Gathered widespread notoriety after authorities discovered that Gein had exhumed corpses from local graveyards and fashioned trophies and keepsakes from their bones and skin. Which, that's the part that kind of inspires her. Inspired Leatherface's mask. It inspired Buffalo Bill wanting to make a woman suit. He confessed to killing two women. Tavern owner Mary Hogan on December 8th, 1954. And a Plainfield hardware store owner named Bernice Warden on November 16th, 1957. Everybody else, he just stole bodies, freshly buried bodies from the graveyard. He looked like the character from My Name Is Mud video by Primus.
Yeah, it's just a weird, like he's this creepy looking skinny dude.
But it's the kind of guy that you wouldn't suspect is doing that kind of stuff. It just looks like some weirdo farmer that lives out in the sticks. When they finally got into his house, they found things such as lamps with lampshades made of human skin. I believe he had some
he had fan poles made out of nipples.
Nipples, yeah.
Nipples. Who looks at a nipple and is like, you know what? When I'm feeling around in the dark for a light switch, I want to grab a nipple and pull on it.
They found some whole human bones, and they also found fragments, a wastebasket made of human skin covering some of the chair seats, skulls on the bedpost, female skulls, some of them with the top sewn off, bowls made from human skulls. A corset made from a female torso, skin from shoulders to the waist. Leggings made from human leg skin. Mask made from the skin of female heads. Mary Hogan's, one of his victims, her face mask in a paper bag and her skull in a box. Bernice Warden's entire head was in a burlap sack. Her heart was in a plastic bag in front of Gein's pot-bellied stove. 9 vulva in a shoebox.
I'm laughing to keep from, like, gagging. That's just fucking gross.
A young girl's dress with the vulvas of 2 females judged to have been about 15 years old. A belt made from female human nipples. 4 noses. A pair of lips on a window shade drawstring. Of course, the lampshade made from human skin. And fingernails from female fingers. Artifacts were all photographed and then destroyed. Gein told investigators that between 47 and 52, he made as many as 40 nocturnal visits to 3 local graveyards to exhume recently buried bodies while he was in a daze-like state. On about 30 of those visits, he said he came out of the daze while in the cemetery and just left the grave, leaving everything behind, and came home empty-handed. On other occasions, he dug up the graves of recently buried middle-aged women he thought resembled his mother, took the bodies home, and he tanned their skins and made his paraphernalia. Sick, sick man.
Mm-hmm.
It's what you'd imagine in a Rob Zombie horror movie. Was this real life Ed Gein.
The thing is, though, man, you know how a guy like that has to just sleep well, because you know something, whatever's creeping around in there, like, it's already so bad.
Yeah.
There's nothing, like, it's not going to get any worse. Like, there's nothing in here worse than me.
Right, yeah.
Like,
yeah. All he has to do is tell them what he does. Tell them about his nipple belt. Look at this belt I have on right here.
Turn on the lights. You're going to rob me, huh? Like, oh, God. Jeez. Yeah. Ed Gein had some mama issues.
Oh, yeah. He had a lot of issues. But I think that'll do us for this episode.
Well, God willing, this actually got recorded. I mean, I'm looking at the numbers. They're ticking off.
Okay.
After our technical difficulties at the beginning and in the middle. We never have problems. Usually we hit record and this thing's bulletproof.
Just let it go through, right?
The only thing that stops this recording is if somebody needs to take a leak or something, we just pause it for a second. And sometimes we don't even do that.
Yeah, we just keep talking through it.
So, anyway, if there are any technical difficulties, feel free to let us know in the comments, but I don't think we're going to re-record it.
No.
We'll do another subject. This is it. It was hard enough getting back to this one. But hey, you know, it was a fun episode, so we wanted to redo it.
Yeah.
We had fun recording it the first time, so, and it was fun recording it the second time. Hey guys, we're going to go ahead and sign off for now. But before we go, be sure to go onto Facebook and do a search for Scary Dad's Haunted Halloween Show. If you're already a fan of the Scary Dad Facebook page, it'll be linked right there. But even if you do a search, there's not a whole lot of... If you Google anything Scary Dad, we're there.
Scary Dad Haunted.
We're
search that and you'll find us.
We're all over the place. So
follow us on Twitter at ScaryDad1. The number one. Don't spell it out.
Yeah. And I'm on Instagram as well. Always trying to post up pictures of funny and cool things. And there's one I didn't share it. But this dude... He takes these weird comic book pages or covers, and he like photoshops different captions. So there's a Masters of the Universe cover, and Hordak's got Prince Adam in the slime pit, and in the actual comic, Prince Adam's just getting covered in slime, and Orko's like, oh no, but then the Photoshop version, Adam's getting covered in slime, and his caption is like, "You're really weird for building this." It's a really fun thing to watch. So anyway, you know, check us out on Instagram. That wasn't mine, but you know, like those are the sorts of things that you'll see.
It's just right.
Weird and funny and gothic horror and stuff. And if you know anybody who wants to be at the Scary Dad's Haunted Halloween Show as a vendor, all of our pricing is live, and hit me up and I'll send you an invoice and you can send me some money, and then you can sit down and you can sell stuff to all of our spooky guests. Yep. On September 29th. And that's enough of a plug at the top and the bottom of the show. We will see you next week, where we're talking about something truly different. I don't even know what we're talking about next week. Keep it scary, guys.
Later.
was sweating.